there's some days when I just be like, I don't give a shit. I'm going to stay on the sofa. I'm going to drink my wine and I'm going to eat my Cheetos. But I know that it's energy that I'm just letting run through me because I know that's not going to be me tomorrow.
Welcome to Ladies First with Laura Brown. I'm Laura Brown, editor-in-chief of InStyle magazine, and each week I'm talking to a legendary lady about what she does, how she does it, and what we can learn from her. Taraji P. Henson is a performer in her bones, but her work to destigmatize mental health issues, well, that's where her real power is.
So I just want to say, Taraji P., for perfect, Henson, thanks for joining Ladies First, and you are a first lady in so many ways, and I think what I love about you, and so many do, is not only your ability and not only what you create, but your absolute utter frankness, honesty, and drive.
Thank you.
This is 2 days after the inauguration, so the mood is lifted, I think, generally. But we're in January. We've been doing this since March. How's it been for you, buddy?
Well, I think your question was going to be, when did you decide to just put the drinking?
Well, that's all part and parcel.
2 days ago. I had to make sure the future was looking bright. 2 days ago. So it's Friday and it's time.
What was like your Tuesday?
Oh, God, it just depends. Like, okay, because I keep red wine and I ran out of red wine. That's when I knew it was a problem. Then when I run out of the wine, okay, then it's like I have a drink machine. It's like the Keurig coffee machine. But instead of coffee in the pods, it's a drink. They have margarita. They have old fashioned, which is my favorite. But old fashioned isn't good for me because I've probably gained like 5 pounds just from old fashions.
Well, look, there's worse things. But I actually remember, I think, receiving a text from you around about the time that your booze machine arrived. And the utter delight on your part and savage jealousy on mine. So are you gonna fire it up tonight?
I don't know if I'm going to do that or if I want wine. Or I did when I was in for my 50th birthday. I brought back some, what's that beautiful Casa Azul?
That's tequila, right?
That's tequila.
When you were leading up to your birthday, what was your sort of attitude? And how am I going to celebrate this? How am I going to work up to it?
Okay, so what happened was I was getting big. I was gaining weight. I think I was going through a depression. I just didn't care. And I was eating everything. I was waking up with Cheetos stuck to my butt. I had Cheetos by the bed. You can always see how I'm feeling. Look at my nightstand beside the bed. There's a bunch of shit on it. Then clearly she's going through something. And my closet. If my closet is a mess, and right now, there's no reason to be a mess. Where are we going?
So you were Cheetosing.
I was Cheetosing. I was gummy bearing. I was doing it all. And so 50 was coming. And I was like, all right, now you better pull it together because you want to greet 50 and be like, yes, instead of 50 happening to you. Otherwise, you're going to feel old, you're going to feel fat, and you're going to continue to seep down into the black hole. So that's when I called my trainer and I was like, we got 30 days to get it together. And in that midst of the 30 came the Meg Thee Stallion video, the AMA Awards. All of that stuff came because I think I shifted my energy.
Wow.
I honestly believe because I shifted my energy, that's how I welcomed that stuff, because I was in the welcoming place, I guess. I don't know.
Do you recognize it and then make a conscious decision, or is it hard sometimes?
I have a therapist, so she gives me exercises and things that I can do. And then there's some days when I just be like, I want to be dark. I don't give a shit. I'm going to stay on the sofa. I'm going to drink my wine and I'm going to eat my Cheetos. But I know that it's energy that I'm just letting run through me because I know that's not going to be me tomorrow. I just have to be honest with myself. Very honest. How do you feel today? Don't force yourself to do something if you don't feel like it.
How's your motivation been with work? And I know you've actually been super prodigious and we'll get into that, but like, has there been days where you're just like, I can't do it? Like, I'm not hungry for it.
I have no acting things right in front of me. So I haven't acted in almost a year.
I was going to say, do you feel weird?
I feel fucking crazy. And everybody got movies coming out and I'm like, wait a minute, where are my movies? I got no movies. Because you know, usually I have movies.
You have movies. And carpets.
I'm watching all these people have fun and do these press tours and junkets. And I'm like, I have nothing. But it's okay, because I think this time is absolutely about that. Because if the circumstances didn't sit me down, I wouldn't. I haven't enjoyed my house here in California in over 6 years. I'm doing things to my house now, and I needed this moment, honestly. And I really, because I was driving myself crazy, and that'll make me low. Like, they don't want you. You'll never work again in this. It's stupid. But you, your mind will play tricks on you like that. In the wee hours tonight, you know, like 2, 3, the bitching hour. And that's when I usually wake up crazy. I had to talk myself down. And it's like, you know, at first I resented it. But if you resent, you don't grow. You have to accept. And that's the biggest thing I've learned. My biggest lesson throughout this entire pandemic has been acceptance, patience, and gratitude.
But you know what? One of the marvelous things about you too is you're not jaded. You got all of this going on, right? But you have never seemed less than appreciative. What's kept that little fire in you of being happy to be there?
I think it's the little girl in me, the little girl that dreamt that I hope one day, because I did a lot of wishing and hoping. And God got sick of me and was like, let her in, Jesus Christ, God, get her out of here.
And you also, like, Amanda, this is an oft-told legend story. You're coming to Hollywood, you know, at 26, single mom, $700, right? 700?
700.
So you arrived as a young woman and a mom.
It wasn't about networking and meeting people. It was about proving my worth, you know, because I often heard, oh, girl, you got to go out and to the clubs and stuff and network. And it's like, well, I have a kid, so that's not going to work. I knew I had talent. I was trained and I studied the craft of acting. So there was nothing that you couldn't put in front of me that I couldn't do.
Right.
I was on a mission. I didn't have time to party and club and do all that other stuff. I wanted to be taken seriously. No one's being taken seriously at a club.
No, the club is not the center.
Listen, I'm trying to get drunk. I don't want to hear you. The music's too loud. Shut up. Pass the joint. I don't know. But I'm not trying to do no damn business.
The club is not the center of gravitas. Did you ever take your son on auditions?
I had to sometimes. He was a very well-behaved kid because he had no choice. he was a well-behaved kid. He understood what I was doing because I talked to him and told him, this is my dream and I'm out. He understood step for step. It was just me and him. So he knew what I was trying to do. So he would just go and sit and wait. And when I come out, he'd be like, Mom, how did it go? And I can't remember who it was, but they were trying to hit on me coming through the door. And I think Marcel was like 9 years old. And the guy wasn't overt, but he made a little pass. And I was like, hey, whatever. And I kept walking. And Marcel was like, who's that clown?
Just never let him leave your side. He could just be your filter forever.
Exactly.
What was the first tangible success to you? But also, what was it to him?
Buying my first house. That's when I felt like, okay, I made it. Because the way I did it was, I didn't wait until I booked my first series regular gig. It's a waiting period when you first come into that kind of money. And it wasn't a lot, but you know, it was more than I had ever seen on one paycheck at a time every week. I was like, what? Wow. But I didn't go crazy because the fear is being broke again. So it was like, I got the show. And the first thing I needed was a car, because the day that I had to go and test for Studio Network, my car wouldn't start. And I sat there and I was like, you are funny. I said, really? This is what you do to me? And so then I had to get in the cab. This is LA. Cabs, you just don't go. Boop, boop, stand on. I don't know how to catch a cab in LA. I got there in the nick of time. And I had to calm myself down. I was beside myself, but I had to calm myself down. And John Hamm was there, and he was testing for Studio and Network at the same time as I was for his part in the same show. And he saw me very nervous, and he put his hand, and we started talking. everything. And I was like, oh my God, my car broke down. He was like, but you made it. You're here, blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, we both booked the gig. Then they had the nerve to make us partners on the show towards the end.
They did? Oh my, yeah, I had no idea of your ham history.
Yes, my ham history.
Mm-hmm. So what does success mean to you now?
Success to me is not even money. It's my mental state is, you know, my health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because how much has that been challenged in the past? Obviously, six years on Empire, and then you kind of, you know, you're doing movies here and, you know, here and there.
And then I stop.
And then you stop.
Nothing.
But how does it feel being in that kind of, because when you at the top of your power is just swaggering, you know? And yeah, how does it feel to have that kind of stop and then you're like, okay, now what?
Well, one thing about me is you can't keep a good woman down, and I always come back.
No, but just as it's an archetype you played for a long time.
Well, it does, but then that's when I have to tap into everything happens for a reason, because the things that I have coming, once this pandemic is over, or we get back to some sort of normalcy, not sure we'll go all the way back to normal, I know that I'm going to be busy. I won't have a moment to play in my salon, so I have to shift my thinking and remind myself to take advantage of this time.
Cookie's lying dormant. Cookie's like cookie dough right now.
Cookie's retired, and we're coming up upon on the other things. I only have the window to be the character. Then I have to get back to me. I got my own issues. I don't want the character's issues and mine all the time. So even on set, I could be in a scene where I am bawling, snot, everything. And they yell cut, and I'll be like, girl, okay, so what was they saying? Hand me a tissue. So what was they saying? And then I have to go right back in. And I had to match the cut, but there were some days where I was like, I don't feel like being Cookie today. I don't have it. I would come on set like this, and they would be like, the director, poor director, they'd be like, so I'm like, can you just give me a minute? All right, when you yell action, trust me, she gonna show up. Right now, I can't. She's a lot. She's a lot. And I literally would walk through the rehearsals because I can't give you all of that. I have to reserve me.
Do you become like antisocial, or do you have like a day where you just don't really want to return a text, or like how do you refill yourself?
Okay. So like I told my mom, she's like, you didn't call me. I say, Mom, you have to understand, I have a career where I talk a lot. I talk a lot, and you'll be surprised at how much I can't stand to hear my voice. Like, I can't watch my show, Peace of Mind, because that's Taraji. I don't like the way I sound. It's hard. You want to torture me, strap me down in a room, lock me up, and make me watch and listen to myself be myself. I can watch me play characters because it's a departure from me, but I will not sit and watch any interviews that I do with Jimmy Kimmel, Fallon, all the Jimmys. I won't.
There is a grace or a relief in knowing what your limitations are. And that's and embracing your limitations. I think we're all, you know, oh, women, we can do this. And of course we can. But there is something to be said for like, I actually can't today, or I don't want to today. And identifying that in yourself.
And for me, you know, being a Black woman, you know, we took on that phrase, strong Black woman, which is very dangerous. It's very dangerous. It dehumanizes us. And I understand why we took that on, Black women being the bottom of the totem pole, never being seen. I get it. I understand. But it's when others take on and they go, yes, strong Black woman. And then it dismisses us. She's a strong Black woman. Then if my child or somebody I know is gunned down in the streets, I'm supposed to be strong through that. I'm not allowed to be angry. I'm not allowed to be pissed off and say, burn this bitch down. I can't say that because you've taken everything from me. I'm not allowed to feel that. I'm just supposed to be strong through that.
It's not tenable. And it's not, you're not an archetype.
I'm not a fairy. I hear the Black girl magic. I get it. It's sweet. But baby, I'm not a fairy. I don't have magic dust. I remember when I was introduced at Howard University, you know, HBCU, Black pride, you know, strong Black woman. And I, for so many years, I was coping. And how I was coping was dysfunctional. And what you do is you try to be strong as long as you can until you smack a wall.
I think you should just walk around whenever we get to see people again, just go up to them and go, hey, nice to see you. I'm not a fairy.
I'm going to get a t-shirt. I'm going to make a t-shirt.
Welcome back to Ladies First with me, Laura Brown. This week I'm catching up with legendary, gorgeous, sparkling spark plug, Taraji P. Henson.
I want to talk about peace of mind because, look, as mental health is a huge priority of yours, you started a foundation in memory of your father and have done incredible work on that. But tell me about how peace of mind came about.
Okay, so we made a big splash on the mental health scene when we launched the foundation, right? And the feedback and the people that were being positively affected by it, you know, then the pandemic hit and I was like, oh my God, wow, this is what do we do? And then I, at one point was like, I don't know if we're going to be able to continue on with this foundation because we had exhausted all of our money on our convention because we had to make a big splash. So the convention was very important. That's what got us the notoriety to get me before Congress.
Yeah.
Then it was time to like raise money. Nobody's bringing no money. Nobody's, you know, you think, don't you see what I'm doing? I'm important. Give me your money. And it's not that easy. You know, a lot of it was my money, footing the bill, you know, and then the pandemic hit. And then we started the virtual fundraiser for free therapy and that took off and it hasn't stopped. Now the show was already something we were working on pre-pandemic and it just was a situation where everything lined up. And it was perfect timing. And Facebook was like, we want to get this going now because the suffering was
a lot. It's so dark. Yeah. It's
oh, my
so dark.
God.
Yeah.
And so they pushed it through and ramped it, amped it up. And we got it together really quick. And we did 8 episodes. They're all in the can now. We're about to, the last one is coming Monday.
It is. It's up there already. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The logic behind the show was, yes, the foundation is doing great and is successful, but how do we go beyond that? How do we get to more people, more eyeballs? Because there are more people out there that need it. And we love the idea of Facebook because most people can't afford therapy. You got to think about, well, should I buy this meal? Should I spend $300 on groceries or $300 on my mental health? It's a lot. So we felt like Facebook was a great home for it because Facebook is free.
It is. And everybody's on it.
And everybody's on it and you get to get all of these incredible tools for what you might be going through. Not only that, the show lives on. So you watch the show, then people go into the chat and they talk. They have a place to know that they're not alone. We have a resource guide that will, if you have problems with finding a culturally competent therapist, we have a whole resource guide where we will help you. Like, so it's just not a talk show. Like, it's level to it.
It is a huge thing to be a mental health advocate, but then you are interviewing people. Have you always had an ability to do that? But how did you have to get yourself into that? Okay, I'm going to talk to this person and about this thing and do it well and practically.
Well, I'm a therapist. Like, I'm literally, my best friend and myself, we are patients. Like, I suffer from anxiety and depression, just like millions of the audience members that are watching. So I don't feel like I'm sitting in a higher seat. I feel like I'm in the audience learning along with the audience. I'm just the person chose to ask the questions. But
that's what I mean. But you still have to ask in a certain way. And
I ask because I want to know. I'm asking because it's important and people need to know.
What are you the most confident in the way that you relate to people publicly? And what are you the least confident in, be it in a performance or as a host or?
Least confident? Probably singing because I don't do it often. For me, I have to vocalize. I have to train. I have to warm up the old pipes, you know. So if it's singing, everything else, if it's me, my personality, that's just who I am. I can only be me and I'm very confident in who I am.
When do you want to act again? What are you looking to do? Or is there a...
Now.
The what?
I want to act now. I have... Where's my...
What are you looking at? What's the...
Well, see, I bought this. I need... Randomly, I come in here and go, action! And just put it down.
And it helps. Do you do that before you get up in the morning?
Just whenever I come in here and I got to do it.
What would you like to do if you had like your druthers after this? Is there something you're looking at?
I want to fucking laugh. I want to make you laugh until you piss your pants. I want to be on a show or a movie. This shit is so funny that you break character. Remember Carol Burnett? Ooh, I loved it. I lived to watch for them to break character.
What's been making you laugh through all of this?
I can't watch heavy stuff. Like, I tried to watch Your Honor.
Yeah, I've gotten through one of those. That's dark.
I can't. I loved Ma Rainey. I loved it because I'm a big theater person. So that was just amazing. And oh God, it was just so good.
And just seeing Chadwick just give it his all, absolute all.
Any Black person that comes from theater and they get a chance to do August Wilson, they going to transcend because that's our Shakespeare.
Yeah, right. You're right. Tell me about, actually, we are 2 days after the inauguration. Howard University alum Kamala Harris. Do you know her?
We've met, but I don't know her.
Kamala, first Black woman, first South Asian woman. How does that feel? How does that feel?
I posted it the other day with her walking in her Chucks, and it's like, ladies, wear your shoes because glass is everywhere. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo! That touched me deep to my soul. That touched me my soul. I mean, we needed it. I just feel a big sense of, we got class back in the White House.
To see a Black woman there, just because she earned the right to be there, because she's qualified to be there, there's no song and dance about it. It's just, is what it is. I just know, I think this is part of this big cultural shift where that will hopefully become a given. Just a given. Not something that's talked about and something that's unusual.
Want the best person for the job. We don't care what's down there. I really don't. Can you run this country and make me feel safe? Like,
tell me about how you learned to own your ability and what you were paid, and in terms of roles you've taken, that you've had learned to advocate for yourself.
It wasn't until Benjamin Button, actually. Because I had started making my way. You know, when you're first starting, you have to build up to a quote.
Yes.
So me and my team felt like we had finally gotten to this place where I could ask for $500,000. That's all we were asking for.
Right.
Couldn't get it. And, you know, I don't know exactly how much Brad Pitt and Kate Blanchett, but I'm sure they got whatever that quote, which was way more than what I will probably see in my lifetime, because they're not paying actors that much anymore. To Ryan Reynolds for Deadpool. But you don't hear a lot of $20 million quotes anymore. But at this time, that was happening. And rightfully so. I'm not saying they shouldn't have paid those Kate and Brad what they deserve. They deserve that, okay? Because when this comes out, people are coming because of Brad. And they're going to discover me. I'm bringing a certain amount to the seat too. And I felt like what I was asking at that time in my career was fair. Was fair to the ticket sales that I would contribute to this big film. Wouldn't do it. They did $100,000 is what they offered right away. And then I was gutted.
For the whole, wow.
When it was all said and done, I got $150,000. But I had to swallow my pride, baby.
Right.
And I know people go, $150, that's a lot of money. Well, let me just break it down to you.
Yeah, do, because it's important people know.
I'll break it down to you because I don't want people to ever think that I'm ungrateful, because that is not me. $150,000. Uncle Sam is going to take 50% of that. So now you're left with what? $75,000. Now, before Uncle Sam takes the money, I have to pay my team before taxes. 30%. So once Uncle Sam takes his 75, then I got another 30 that's coming off of that 75. So I may have made 40,000. I have a child. He has tuition because I didn't drive fancy cars and get the biggest house. I got a nice, modest house. And I got a car that will get us from A to B that I liked, that was nice, because my money was in my son's education. His tuition was $30,000 a year.
So that's his tuition, basically.
And I had to be down there for like 3-4 months and lived in the embassy suites with people that were displaced from their homes because of Katrina. Now, listen, they do give you an allowance to find somewhere to live. But remember, I had already did the math. And I was like, so do I take this $10,000 and go blow it on somewhere to live momentarily? See, single mama, I gotta be thinking on my feet.
Mm-hmm.
So I opted out of finding my own place to live. I kept that allowance in my pocket and I used it, and I just stayed at Embassy Suites, which was a fraction of the cost of what it would have cost if I got it a fancy, you know, condo. I just wasn't there in my career yet.
Right.
Because they didn't see my value yet. So I had to prove that. I had to swallow my pride and I had to go in and I had to kill that role.
Which you did and received a nomination for it in the end, but you didn't know that at the start. So you did have to take, you had to take that swing. And how, obviously, in the years since and as you've consolidated yourself, how do you negotiate now or advocate for yourself now?
That moment made me start standing up for myself because I was, this is ridiculous. And then Cookie, when I portrayed Cookie, that now you gonna get my money? Because I've proven myself. This is the biggest show you've ever had. I mean, you know, in a long time or whatever. We overseas now. You gotta get your money.
What a town.
What a town.
What a town. Okay, 10 first. You ready? The first time you discovered therapy.
Ooh, I would have to say about 4 years ago. Not discovered it, but actually started going.
How did it feel when you first started going? Did it feel just so strange?
I felt strange at first because I hadn't found my therapist. And I felt like it ain't working, but it doesn't work if you don't work it. And what I mean by that is that finding a therapist is just like finding your significant other. You keep going until you hit the jackpot.
Exactly. And they might be more consistent. I think you've already answered this, but maybe you have a different first time you owned your shit.
I had to since I was a kid because the parents I have.
Right. You had to pick yourself up all the time.
Had to. I had to own it all. Well, you know, when you come from the hood, there's no fantasy. There's no, it's real time. It's real in the hood. And so I come from that. So I had to own it.
This is DNA. Okay, first breakout role to you. What your first role where you felt in your bones?
I would have to say Hustle and Flow. I knew we were doing something special. I didn't realize how special until we got to Utah. And we are this our night to preview our film, and it's 1,500 seats, standing room only, and they are all ages, all walks of life, white hair, pepper, salt and pepper. Whoop, that trick came on. You know, I'm in the movie and I'm watching it, and then the song comes on and I look around and there are fists in the air, all everybody. I'm looking around and I'm like, what the fuck have we done?
Wow.
You got to remember, no one in Hollywood wanted to touch that film. A black pimp with one of the holes being white? No. Going to Utah, no one knew who I was. I'm on the plane. All I heard on the plane, packed, going from LA to Utah, Hustle and Flow. Did you hear about Hustle and Flow? Everybody's talking about Hustle and Flow. I'm on the plane. My heart is pounding. I want to jump out of my skin and go, I'm in the movie. They didn't even know it was me. I mean, who was I at the time, you know?
Oh, okay. First favorite of memory from the set of Empire. First or favorite memory from the set of Empire.
When I had a, well, all those times Cookie slapped bitches, but I guess on a personal note, I had a child from Make-A-Wish and she wanted to meet me, and that I had never had a Make-A-Wish. I mean, you know, that's huge for someone not knowing if they're going to live or make it or whatever to say, I want to meet this person.
Yeah.
And the joy, that's when I go, see, that's why I know what I'm doing is important and it's bigger than me.
Okay. So, it's been a long week and now you got me in my feelings. Okay. A Cookie outfit that you'd wear in real life.
I have a lot of them.
Yeah. What's your favorite?
I have a lot of her Chanel jewelry because I collect it. I didn't keep all of it. Like the trendy stuff, I didn't keep. Stuff that you wouldn't know, you couldn't remember if Cookie wore it or not. I kept it. Like those black Chanel velour leggings.
When in doubt, you just hit your clapper and put on your black Chanel leggings and go, welcome to me. Okay. First fan interaction that you remember. First like time a fan came up to you where you realized that you were known.
They used to call me that girl from Baby Boy. They go, that girl from Baby Boy. And I'm trying to think when I started becoming known as Taraji P. Henson. Taraji P. Henson. That's Taraji P. Henson. I don't remember. I have a good friend of mine. She lives in Dallas. She called me the other day. She's an educator. She said, I got the first one. I said, what you talking about? She said, the first Taraji. They're getting ready to come out the woodworks. An older Taraji, someone that's age now. Because I had been getting DMs all my career. I named my daughter after you. I went, where are these babies? Although they're grown now. They're grown.
Oh.
I said, here it comes. They're coming now. Now you're going to understand why I put the P in there. Because I knew a lot of people was going to start naming their kids Taraji. And I didn't want to be confused.
That is so P for prudent. And they have a Taraji army that you've just made. They're going to come.
Right, exactly.
And they can
exactly.
carry you when you're old and tired. Okay. First thing you look for in a script?
The story. It's got to be a good story because the character could be amazing, but if you don't have, it's not going to hold my attention past page 10, 9 times out of 10, it's not a good story. And there are a lot of scripts that I haven't read past page 10, and I won't because I don't have that kind of time.
All right. We've done this at the beginning, but just your gut reaction. First drink you order.
Probably tequila. Tequila with lime and a little splash of agave. Keep it clean.
Keep it gorgeous. Okay. First fashion splurge.
I think it was shoes. I'm a shoe girl. And before I even got into purses, I could afford the shoes because, you know, they go on sale. Some of them purses. So, but it was shoes. It was a Roberto Cavalli I bought. It was a pair of, they were Roberto Cavalli snake wrap around all up the leg sandal, a Giuseppe Zanotti boot. I'll never forget because I held on to them for a long time.
Okay, this is the last one. First thing you'll do when this is all done, this pandemic is over.
Go on a vacation. Go fly somewhere. Fly.
Where would you go?
Tanzania. I'm actually even looking at a show that I can host over there. I want to go to New Zealand and Australia because I might not come back. I need to go. For my 50th, what I really wanted to do was rent a yacht in Ibiza and travel and pull up to the clubs on the yacht. That was my plan. And then, so I have to do that.
You did find a yacht, though.
But it was in Mexico. Like, yeah. You know, I want to pull up. You can't pull up to clubs in your yacht in Mexico. Well, I mean, you aren't trying to pull up to a club in a pandemic either.
You will get your pull up to the club in Ibiza. You will.
I hope I'm not 70, but I don't give a shit. I'm pulling up. You got my table ready, baby.
You got my $1,000 champagne?
Listen, I want old fashioned because at that point, I'm not going to care.
Well, you got 20 years until you don't have to give a shit.
That's true. I have a feeling I'm not going to be that. I have a feeling I'm going to be that 70-year-old woman like, that's 70? Yes, bitch, move.
Look at you. Look at this skin. Look at this face. Look at this, like, look at these brows. Look at these cheekbones. Look at these cheeks. Look at these lips. Taraji P. Henson. Taraji P. for perfect princess. Petunia. you're the best. You're loved.
Thank you so much.
This has been Ladies First with Laura Brown. We can be found wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to our production team at Pod People, Rachel King, Matt Savarese, Danielle Roth, Anne Ford, Anne Kane, and Erica Wong. And thanks to Brian Anstey, Molly Stout, and Haley Mason at InStyle. You can find out more at InStyle.com. Find us on Instagram at InStyle Magazine, on Twitter at InStyle, and you can find me on Insta and Twitter at Laura Brown 99.